Welcome to Stealing from Wizards, Volume 1, Pickpocketing, by R.A. Consul, read by the author. Chapter 20, Return to Sender. The next few days were wonderful. Kuro was nobody again. It was even better than going unnoticed on the streets, because he was being ignored as an equal. He could walk through the halls freely, smiling cordially to people who would put on an uneasy smile as they tried to put a name to his face. He struck up a couple of conversations with other students in the halls about the weather, the upcoming lacrosse game, and the unfairness of homework. They all talked with him politely and happily shared their opinions, though they were a little uncertain about the mustache he had grown using the cream Arthur had given him. He felt like a normal person. He knew it was temporary. His potion wouldn't last out the week. It would spoil even if he didn't drink it all. But he would take as much advantage of it as he could. He decided to join the hunt for the IOU notes. He wasn't as practiced at the art of deception as Marie was, but he had seen professional swindlers at work enough in Bytown Market to have a grasp of the basics. First, he needed to find his marks and establish a bond of trust. This part was easy. He found small groups of people, and, as he walked past, he pulled out a fake IOU note from his pocket. He made as though he'd just found out his candy had been stolen. Often the students were sympathetic and offered condolences, especially the older ones. A couple times, he was even given replacement candy. Whenever he met someone who also received a note, they were often eager to tell him of their own losses and commiserate. The next part of the plan wasn't as easy. He needed to convince them to give him their notes. Talking wasn't his strong suit. He was much better at hiding, being quiet, and going unnoticed. He also didn't like lying, especially as many of the students were quite upset about their losses. He didn't think it right to deceive them any further. Fortunately, he had some truth on his side. He could tell them that he had heard that an Autumn Lodge high schooler was trying to make a case with the notes, and that he thought he would turn his note over to Meredith Thrump. A few of the students he was talking to gave Kuro their notes to turn in with his. A couple of others promised to pass their notes to Meredith themselves. The con was easy, but he left every encounter with his hands sweaty and his heart pounding from fear of being caught. He didn't understand how Marie did it so casually. It was also hard to stand and nod along as people spoke poorly of him. Normally, people were polite enough not to share their opinions of Kuro with each other in his presence. Since the people he was talking to didn't recognize him, however, they held nothing back. Being reminded that he was short, funny-looking, big-eared, no-good, stupid, worthless thief got pretty hard to hear. By Saturday, Kuro had run out of distracting draft. It didn't matter, though. He had collected 4 IOUs and brought them proudly to the secret meeting with Arthur, Charlie, and Marie. He hadn't an opportunity to properly brag about his week's activities and was eager to share. He bounded into the disused basement classroom they had agreed to meet in, but nearly tripped over himself when he saw a huge, bear-like figure looming in the dimly lit room. He leapt back and conjured a light to better see the uninvited guest. A glow flickered at his fingertips for an instant, then exploded, launching him backwards into the wall. The huge figure rose and ran to his aid. He felt very foolish as Meredith's familiar, jagged grin came into clear view. "What are you doing here?" Kuro asked as he picked himself up off the ground.
"I've come to collect the notes you have," answered Meredith in her deep, joyful voice. "I got something sorted out."
"What is it?"
he asked eagerly.
"It's a surprise," said Charlie grouchily before Meredith could answer. "She won't tell us."
"I said you would know tomorrow afternoon," Meredith defended. "It's going to be great, I promise."
Kuro had no choice but to agree. He rotated his bag around to an angle where he could reach the drawer he had been keeping the collected notes in, and pulled out the small stack. With his own additions and the ones from the others that week, they had nearly 30 of them. Meredith collected them all and stuffed them into her own satchel. On her way out the door, she stopped to look suspiciously at Kuro.
"My classmates, Marcel and Hannah, both gave me notes, telling me that a very short lodger with a mustache had told them I was collecting them. You wouldn't know anything about that, would you?"
Kuro was about to explain eagerly about the potion and his clever method of collecting notes, but something in her voice gave him pause.
"Why do you ask?"
he said, avoiding her eyes.
because unsanctioned use of potions and spells, particularly mind-affecting ones, are the sort of thing that could get you in a lot of trouble. I'm kind of responsible for the younger lodgers. I can't think of any with a big bushy mustache, though. Can you?
No, replied Kuro. That would be a very odd thing for a junior student to have.
Well, since I can't identify the student, I suppose there's nothing I can do. But if I get any more reports of suspicious activity, I'd have to look into it. Understand?
Yeah, of course, said Kuro.
The rest of the day moved like molasses in Alfheim. They all had a mountain of homework that needed doing, and the only thing on any of their minds was Meredith's surprise. They collectively worked through the incomprehensible algorithms for numerology. They were learning various ways to divide things by zero. This was a particularly frustrating unit, as whenever they successfully solved a problem, the page they were working on would cease to exist. Mrs. Lovelace had told them this was a good sign, but it made it very difficult to refer to past problems for help. Charlie made a small error on one problem and accidentally caused her work to multiply uncontrollably. They had to flee the room before the massive expanding paper trapped them inside and crushed them all. They took this as a sign to stop working and turn in for bed. Kuro had more trouble sleeping than usual. He trusted Meredith that whatever her surprise was, it would be good, but he really wished that she hadn't told him to expect a surprise. It made him anxious, and that turned into a restless night, plagued by nightmares when he could sleep. He dragged himself, bleary-eyed and late, to school. Something very odd was going on. On his walk to school, he could see a steady stream of high school students descending the cliff to the junior high on their winged horses and enchanted carpets. Upon entering the school, he was directed to leave again and head to the amphitheater. As he picked his way through the crowd to where his class was sitting, he noticed Meredith talking to Bella on a higher tier of benches. Bella was nodding resignedly. Then Meredith walked out of the bleachers and down to the stage. On the stage were several teachers, including Flint and Ms. McCutcheon, along with their counterparts, Principal Thrimson and Vice Principal LeFay from the high school. Also lounging about the stage were a half dozen Luton. Meredith was speaking to Ms. Crawley and one of the unfamiliar teachers, a relatively young man with a calculated quantity of stubble and wavy hair carefully styled to look as though it hadn't been. Ms. Crawley smiled and nodded to Meredith, then made her way to the lectern at the center of stage. She waited for the students to notice her and quiet down before she spoke.
Thank you all for your attention. We have a special demonstration today.
Kuro thought he saw a slightly mischievous smirk creeping through the teacher's carefully controlled calm.
One of our students has been working with myself and Mr. Pendragon to develop a new spell, along with the help of some of our Luton staff. We thought you would all like to see it first before we publish it more publicly.
Ms. Crawley waited for the polite clapping and curious chatter to settle before continuing.
It is a spell that returns mail to the sender, even if the sender is unknown. This has been quite a tricky bit of magic to work out. It combines two familiar spells, a returning spell to have objects return themselves to their owners, and the enchantment used to help direct postal Luton to return regular letters to their sender. We have had a unique opportunity to test it out, as several notes from an unidentified source have been circulating this year. I'm quite pleased with the result.
A murmur started to pass through the crowd of students. Many eyes turned to Kuro. For the first time, he did not feel the need to shrink under their accusing gazes. Instead, he scanned the assembly for guilty eyes.
"I've one here to demonstrate with," said Mr. Pendragon with a roguish smirk. He held up a torn piece of paper with the letters IOU clearly visible.
He walked over and handed it to Welk, the Luton, then started to cast. Mr. Pendragon and Ms. Crawley had to cast simultaneously, one in Gaelic, the other in French. They moved in separate rhythms, and their voices varied from harmonious to unpleasant dissonance. Welk, one of the Lodge Luton, stood in front of them holding an IOU note. After a few seconds, Welk's eyes brightened, and he gave them the thumbs up before vanishing. All eyes turned to Kuro. But Welk did not appear anywhere near him. The audience was murmuring quiet accusations and insults, but not loudly enough to drown out the loud and bright voice of Welk calling out from the back rows of the amphitheater.
"Letter for you, miss," he said.
All eyes snapped to the bench where Welk was politely presenting the IOU to Bella, who accepted it, looking grim but unsurprised. The entire student body gasped. One of the Summerhill boys stood and started shouting,
"Oh, that's rubbish! Everyone knows who makes those notes!"
Sit down, Hugo, Bella growled and yanked the older boy into his seat. Mr. Pendragon had apparently been expecting this.
Bella has already confessed to the forgery and served her sentence.
What is it, Bella?
The cost of framing a fellow student for theft.
2 weeks of night detention, she said loudly enough for the whole assembly to hear. She looked simultaneously angry, ashamed, and somehow very smug.
Pendragon continued, his bright, friendly voice starting to turn darker.
I've heard that there were some other similar notes as well. Does anyone have one we could test the charm on?
There was a rushing of bags, and several hands went up with scraps of paper in their fingers. Some of the teachers at the front produced small piles of their own, and Meredith held up her stack. The mood of the assembly was changing. Eyes had turned from Kuro and were now looking around warily at other students. Ms. Crawley and Mr. Pendragon started casting their spell over and over as the Luton grabbed notes and delivered them back to their authors. As the notes were delivered around the room, angry shouting and fevered denials filled the amphitheater. Kuro was startled by a sudden fight erupting right beside him. Oliver had tackled Sean and was screaming bloody murder at him. His attention was torn from that by a shriek of indignant fury and denial as a note was politely dropped into Evelyn's lap. It looked like the entire school was about to hurtle into an all-out brawl when the room fell suddenly, utterly, magically silent. The only remaining noise in the amphitheater was a gentle swishing of Principal McCutcheon's skirts as she walked calmly from her seat on the stage to replace Ms. Crawley at the lectern. The fighting stopped. Everyone looked up, curious and frightened at what she might do. Ms. McCutcheon looked out over the students with an expression so severe that several visibly shuddered under it. She stood unspeaking for an agonizingly long time, her disapproval falling over the room like a crushing weight.
I am, she began, her voice cold and level, exceedingly disappointed to think that given the slightest opportunity, students at this school would descend to theft, would betray the trust of one another, and would without shame allow an innocent to shoulder the blame. If I had not seen it for myself, I would not have believed it.
Her anger was palpable, and several students looked ready to run.
The very notion that students here would abandon all the values Avalon espouses, nobility, honor, integrity, and discipline, is appalling. It is not only a failure of the individuals, but of those who allowed this to happen and carry on for so long, their friends, their family within their residences, and the school as a whole. And in this I include myself. We should all do better.
The magical silence faded, but it was barely noticeable. The guilt and shame hanging over the entire room had stolen away their voices. Even the victims of the thefts were shamed for blaming Kuro so readily.
Penalty for each forged note will match that described by Belladonna. Vice principals from both schools shall be speaking with each of you to arrange your detentions.
Kuro could see Mr. Flint and Miss LeFay making lists of who had received a returned note. The students were growing restless and angry again. But before a new riot could erupt, the principal continued.
Consider this an opportunity to prove ourselves better people in the second half of the year. To encourage stronger relationships and heal some of the damage done by the choices made by several of you. I should also remind you,
a sharpness in her voice cut down the rumbles of rebellion,
that the punishment being prescribed matches that given to someone with the strength of character to admit to their wrongdoing and make efforts to atone to their victim. I have faith that the rest of you will demonstrate similar integrity. If I find over the coming days that this is not the case, and my faith has been misplaced, myself and Principal Thrimson will have no choice but to meet with you personally, likely in the company of your parents.
Ms. McCutcheon gestured to the mountain of a man who was the principal of Avalon High. He nodded slowly in agreement, while his eyes bore holes into the guilty students. Ms. McCutcheon left the lectern, indicating that the assembly was over
and that the students should return to their classes. Many angry glares shot between students as they filed out of the amphitheater. A few people fled quickly, pushing through the crowd and running to return their stolen goods before Ms. McCutcheon or their victims could mete out any more serious retribution. Only one person was looking at Kuro with any particular interest. Evelyn Lemieux. Her eyes were knives as she tried to glare Kuro to death. She had her forged IOU note crushed into a ball in her hand, and her flawless ivory skin had turned an ugly shade of red. The problem was of her own making, but she looked at Kuro with such enmity, such unbridled loathing, that Kuro couldn't help but smile.
Thank you for listening to Stealing from Wizards. If you liked our show, please consider rating or reviewing on iTunes. If you want to support this podcast or just can't wait for the next chapter, the full book is available on Amazon, Kobo, and Indigo. Our theme music was written by Camille Saint-Saëns, transcribed by Franz Liszt, performed by Rebecca Verdun, and used with permission. This episode was produced by Jim Tigwell.